This is DJ Fusion of the Fuse Box Radio Broadcast and BlackRadiosBack.com, and you're now listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio, another slice of real black radio for the masses. All right, peace.
This is APNS Public Radio.
The opinions expressed in dispatches represent the analysis of the participating editors and may not necessarily reflect the group positions of the ANG or its public news wires.
I'm Andrew Westmoreland. I'm a journalist. And we just, you know, we go out into the community and we find stories that have national importance. You can follow me on Twitter at @DrewWest_press. And you're listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Okay, welcome back. This is the Angry Indian, and you are still listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. I recently had the pleasure of catching up with Layla and Terry. They're the founders of the White Nonsense Roundup. So if it doesn't sound familiar to you, there's a reason for it. Now, you can find information about it, you know, when you go to blogs and you go to some of the alternative news sites. But the mainstream media is not talking about any of this. Now, I'm going to read to you what they're about from their Facebook page. The White Nonsense Roundup was created by white people for white people to address our inherently racist society. We believe it is our responsibility to call our white friends, relatives, contacts, speakers, and authors who are contributing to structural racism and harming our friends of color. We are a resource for anti-racist images, links, videos, artwork, essays, and voices. These can be used by anyone for a DIY White Nonsense Roundup or by the White Nonsense Roundup team to support people of color upon their request. How it works. If you are a person of color, you have enough on your plate. It's not your job to educate white people about privilege, racism, and what's really going on in the world. If a white person is filling your social media with white nonsense, anything from overt racism to well-intentioned problematic statements, tag us and a white person will come round up our own. We welcome your involvement, resource suggestions, and will take your feedback seriously. We are also happy to boost the signal of voices of color. So really what they do is, if someone is giving you a hard time, right, you simply need to add the hashtag no white nonsense and perhaps even the Twitter handle no white nonsense, and they basically jump in on the conversation. So if you're being harassed, you're being hassled, I mean, I'm not saying not to challenge them, because I certainly do, and they deserve to be challenged, and that's the whole point. They're being challenged by other white people, not just you. So when I got in contact with them, the first thing I had to ask them, of course, was, what was the inspiration behind the White Nonsense Roundup?
Terry and I both have been the types who have engaged in conversations in our interpersonal life with other white folks for a long time around the casual racism that exists within white people, particularly in the United States, but really everywhere. And Terry one night came up with the idea of putting our voices out there, of lending a hand, you know, taking a stand for it. And it was, we came up with the idea. Jump in since it was yours.
So this is Terry. So often we see our friends of color having to explain constantly that, yes, racism is real. Yes, what I'm experiencing actually happens. Yes, it matters. Yes, history matters. It just seems like it's a kind of a constant struggle, even when it's from well-intentioned white people who are trying to be friendly, but, you know, are still not getting it, just as you described. And it's exhausting. And I am part of an online feminist collective, and I started to see some individuals kind of saying, hey, y'all, I'm tired. Can anyone jump into this conversation and, you know, take care of your own in a way? And so I thought, what if we did this on a larger scale and we had, you know, a team of volunteers? And we do right now. We have about 60 volunteers who are, you know, scheduled throughout the week to respond to those calls of assistance. And it just helps to alleviate some of that burden, because it's just unfair to ask the same people who are experiencing marginalization to also be our teachers constantly, and then to, you know, give us what, like, cookies for paying attention and being a decent human being if we are actually standing up as allies. So we just thought, you know, that's really unfair. And, you know, good intentions are just not enough right now. We need to actually put action behind those good intentions. Otherwise, we're contributing to the problem.
Yep. Yeah. And so we put our heads together and created the page and the Twitter account. And we just launched on Instagram this week also. Because over there on that platform is a mess.
Yeah, there's a lot of nonsense going on
over there.
And so where we started, we figured like maybe we could get some friends and family involved. And then we did an interview with Egberto Willis in our first 24 hours of existence. And we kind of went viral, at least more than what we were expecting. And we had 25,000 followers within a week. And with all those followers came a lot of requests for help. You know, we very quickly realized that we needed to form an organizational structure, bring on volunteers so we could actually handle the workload that was coming in. And so today is our 7th week anniversary.
Yep.
So we're still very, very new, but have really kind of established a process and have, you know, found success. So we're very glad to see. It's obvious that we have stepped into a void, that this is a real need. It needs to happen more and more.
Anti-racist activism is a form of direct action, which is the purest political activity one can involve themselves in. So I asked Layli and Terry how this new level of political activity for them as white people within an overwhelmingly white society, how this has affected their personal lives.
So one of the essays that kind of inspired us as we were getting started was a white woman who was saying, you know, I'm tired of this. And if you say a racist joke at Thanksgiving dinner, like Thanksgiving dinner is going to get weird. You know, if you come to my wedding and you say something that's problematic, like it's going to get awkward. Like we just have to be willing to make things awkward. And, you know, I think we both have had practice with that kind of in the past. You know, it's a very quick way to learn who's really in your support group and who's not.
But you know, there does come a point, and I think that we are getting at a point in our society right now where there is no neutrality. Like if you're pretending that it's, you can be neutral about issues
and silent
about issues of race and oppression in the United States right now, that inaction is choosing a side. Your silence speaks volumes for what side you're on. And I have never in my, even since I was young, have never been the type who is going to be silent when I see something wrong or when I see something that I feel like I need to stand up against. That's just always been part of my nature since I was young. And I feel like we are at a point now where it is long past time for us white folks to
engage,
to stand up and to be willing to admit the advantages that we have been given because of the color of our skin, to be willing to admit
privilege,
to be willing to admit that there is real violence and trauma happening to people every day. And in a lot of ways, it's happening in our name unless we stand up against it. And we don't
Something we really hope to do is to kind of change the conversation and to change the expectations of white people. Like if it just became a normal process that we called each other out when we heard something and said, you know, that's really not a great way of thinking about it. How about this other alternative? You know, if we're not really willing to do that, I lost my train of thought.
Like if we're not willing to just... Yeah, we have to be willing to make a change. We have to be willing to change. You were talking about, like, if I stand up, what's going to happen to me? Like, I look at those things as social consequences. And as we white folks have to create an environment where there are social consequences for being racist, where there are social consequences for being willfully ignorant.
Yeah.
There has to be social consequences for those things. That's the only thing that really makes people
change.
Particularly white people want to change is that idea that there will be social consequence for the things you say and the things that you spout. And you know, and we want to be a voice out there shifting that dialogue.
And also kind of showing by example, like, you know, we're a bunch of well-intentioned white people, so we're going to mess up. Now, I mean, let's just be honest. There still are things that we are learning. It's like an onion of privilege right there, just kind of layer after layer that we're still uncovering ourselves. And it's just such an important part of the conversation that's missing, is that it's better to try, even if you make mistakes, it's better to try and speak up and not just leave everybody kind of, you know, out there struggling without your assistance. And you know, how important and actually how easy it is to really authentically apologize when we do misspeak or when we do mess up, and that's okay too. You know, we're not being asked to be perfect. We're asked to stand in solidarity.
My next question for Layla and Terry was, how does the White Nonsense Roundup respond to accusations of anti-white bias or reverse racism?
I'm not asking anyone to have shame or some sort of remorse around that. I am talking about the concept of whiteness and how it is a structure that has been created in this country to benefit white people. And that it has been over through history, it's been a legal definition, it's been a social definition, and it doesn't actually reflect a culture or an identity.
Yeah, it's a power structure.
It's a power structure. And if we are not willing to look at that and really see the ways in which it has benefited folks with white skin and marginalized virtually everyone else one way or another, like, that's a problem. And it's not about being anti-white. I'm not anti-anyone. In fact, I feel like I have enough confidence in us white folks that we can be better.
Yeah.
I'm holding you to a higher standard of behavior. I'm holding you to a higher standard of knowledge.
Because I believe you're
capable. If you weren't, if I was anti-white and you weren't worth my time, I wouldn't be doing this work.
As we have seen, many of the reactionary attitudes and responses to anti-racist actions, like the White Nonsense Roundup, have used the usual racist, traditional, antiquated tropes. Lately, there's been a new term, cultural Marxism, which the far right has been using as a, you know, quote-unquote, wake-up call to other white people that left-wing and progressive causes are somehow purposely being driven by an underground Jewish cabal to wipe out white people. So I asked Layla and Terry how they responded to charges that the White Nonsense Roundup is an anti-white organization leading to the genocide of white people in the United States.
Oftentimes we'll ask, it's seemingly obtuse questions, but just really basic questions like, what about caring for others is hating whites? Or like, what about widening your span of compassion is asking for the genocide of the white race? Like, it actually doesn't hurt us to care about other people at all. Where are you getting hung up on this concept? And sometimes that will start a conversation. If they just come back with belligerent language, hate speech, and extremely racist memes, then, you know, they get deleted from the page. But we really try to engage everyone who's even remotely asking a question, because every once in a while something gets through. And at the very least, we are standing up against it and being vocal and spreading information that other readers might pick up on and learn from.
Yeah, we do a lot of work for what we call the bystanders. Like, if we're engaging in a conversation with someone who is insisting that we're anti-white, which happens all the time, or insisting on those really old racist tropes, you know, I'll have a conversation with that person. And even if I'm not getting through to that person, and it's fairly obvious I'm not, I feel like I'm having a conversation for the people that are going to come and read that comment thread. If we just let that person be out there spouting their willful ignorance
unchallenged,
then that's the only narrative that the person who comes along after and reads it gets.
Right. And they think it's okay, or that this is the dominant way of thinking, when in fact, you know, we've we've met a lot of compassionate people and a lot of white people who are very upset and just aren't sure what to do. And so trying to empower them with information so that they can go out there and handle some of this, you know, nonsense themselves, just, it really is the more the merrier. You know, it's going to take a lot of white people standing up to be heard. And the fact that we haven't is just a grave error.
Now, much of the effort for the White Nonsense Roundup is about what's happening online. But of course, you know, the majority of what they're also asking people to do is to take this online activity and bring it into their personal lives. But looking at the internet, why is it so important that anti-racist actions, such as the White Nonsense Roundup, address racism on the internet, on the World Wide Web, and the anonymous bloggers or trolls that are out there doing as much as possible to create chaos, as what we've seen with Leslie Jones?
Well, you know, how back in the day it used to be the revolution will be televised. Mm. I really believe that it has changed to the revolution will be live streamed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, the internet has become such an integral part of how we get our information, how we get our daily news, how we interact with people we know, both people we know and people we don't. The atomization, they refer to it as the atomization of news, where there aren't these like specific cornerstone news sources that people go to, which I think has both vast advantages and some disadvantages. But I think that absolutely, like, the internet is where these things are happening, both the good and the bad. You know, the internet is where people are gathering. And I think it's where we also have to
engage.
We have to engage in fighting these structures and systems of racism and bigotry of all kinds.
Well, I think one way that it's really helped change the conversation in some ways is that we hear and see so much more outside of our immediate friends and community. So I think that we're seeing so much more racism. When I would argue, what was the great quote that we saw that was like, you know, racism hasn't changed, it's just the cameras have.
Yeah, the cameras are new.
And that, you know, that we're seeing more of it as otherwise probably more insulated white people. And that hopefully that exposure and that awareness will help us to change it, because, you know, we were both raised in an era where the ideal was to be colorblind, right? Like, that was somehow the right way to be. It was that you love everybody regardless of color and you just don't see color, and that's a great thing. And all that really did was keep us ignorant and kind of shut down our ways of seeing problems and acknowledging them and hearing and valuing the stories and lived experiences of other people. And so I think that has really changed. That's kind of shattered. Like, there's more and more people realizing that, you know, colorblindness is a form of racism. It's a way of ignoring, trying to ignore a very big problem that affects the livelihood and safety of people of color, and that's not okay. So while it is, gosh, it's like the Wild West on the internet, right? There's just kind of everything and everyone, and there are very few limits. But I'm hoping that the kind of shift of how we get our information and how much more we're learning about what's going on in the daily lives of others, that it can help us as an education tool. Does that make sense? I know I'm sick.
Yeah, it all made sense. Now, okay. I believe it was Terry, you brought up something earlier that I actually want to get into.
Good.
Yeah, but I need you to remind me of...
Oh, yeah. So it was about white fragility and white privilege just as a concept.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I really like you to go into that more, because, you know, I'm still trying to, you know, to actually process it.
Yeah. Okay.
So I'd like you to explain what you meant by that.
Well, this is Layla. It's really something that we deal with so much in the work that we do.
You want to just define it?
So, like, white fragility is the... Often when issues of race come up for white people, there's this immediate sense of defensiveness. Yeah, and this sense that somehow we're being asked to take responsibility for every atrocity that's ever happened, or that we're asked to somehow feel guilt for being white,
or suffer unspeakable consequences,
or suffer some horrible consequences for the fact that racism exists. Like, there's this irrational knee-jerk response in white people to want to shut down conversations about race because we're terrified of the consequences of having that conversation. And we've faced that a lot, where we've become more concerned with being called racist than we are concerned with the realities of racism and how we participate in those realities. Like, we've developed this dichotomy among white people where to be racist means you're a bad person. And if you don't perceive yourself as a bad person, then it is impossible for you to be participating in racism. And what we're trying to do is get people to realize that racism is like
it's a structure.
It's a structure. It's like the air that we breathe. It's not, you can't avoid it. You can't not be exposed to it. You can't not internalize it. Growing up in the United States, like, you just cannot. And it's not about the fact that somehow you're a bad person because you did something or said something that is racist or contributes to structures of racism. It's that you don't know better, do better. Like, right. You need to learn how you're participating in the system in order to no longer give that tacit participation. And people are so afraid of moving into that space that they just respond with these really reactionary things, like, you know, the response of, like, you've hurt my feelings, and that's the real racism.
Yeah, or it's you who are bringing up race, therefore you're the racist. Mm-hmm. We get that a lot.
Now, we've been talking about race, you know, strictly here, but I have always made the argument, even though we're discussing the issue of race and racialism, xenophobia, institutional racism, structural racism, a lot of it really comes down to exploitation, abuse, and people who really don't want to give up their power. I know as a male, when I challenge other males in terms of male power in relation to women, and then bring in race in terms of gender and discrimination, I usually, even for males who consider themselves to be pro-female, consider themselves to be liberal / progressive, many who will even claim to be feminists, but they get very, very touchy, and they get very, very nervous, and they get very, very defensive when you start discussing these things. So I asked Layla and Terry if they also spied the same connections and the same hypocrisies and the same, you know, power divisions and power questions and questions of disparity in terms of power and how these relate to race and gender.
Yeah, the crossovers, the intersections between racism and misogyny and... like, the Venn diagram of that is practically a circle. We have to have these conversations sort of side by side. We approach this whole thing from the idea of intersectionality, that all of these types of oppression are linked together, and the ideas behind the philosophies that perpetuate these types of oppression are very much the same, you know, and you have to, like, you have to approach it from the perspective of, like, let's get past, you know, how afraid everyone is of these conversations. You know, this idea, the best quote on it that I've heard, you know, that I've heard sort of to in a nutshell is the idea that, when you're used to privilege, equality feels like oppression.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know, that idea that, like, you're giving up something. You know, just the other day I was having a conversation There was someone who had messaged our page who was in a conversation with this guy who was talking about how, you know, people of color and women were all stealing all the jobs and scholarships and all of that. And I said, well, how about you start by talking to him about the base assumption of what he just said? And the base assumption that he's coming from is that all of those jobs belonged to white men and that other people are taking them. And so what he's saying in a nutshell is that none of those jobs, none of the jobs that exist should go to anyone who's not a white man. And if that's your base assumption, then you need to be honest about what it is you're asking for. And if you are unable to be honest about that base assumption, then you need to like go back and think about it and then come back and be ready to have a conversation.
Yeah, I mean, what's been happening?
Well, it's something that we...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
It's something that we see a lot and we try to talk about more and more is white privilege. And I mean, you can talk about it in very similar terms with male privilege. And those are the benefits that we get for our skin color or for our sex without really deserving that benefit. And so it's like that, you know, white privilege means not having to even think about race when everybody else does. You know, white privilege is valuing your own feelings and your own comfort in a conversation over the literal safety of a person of color. You know, there's a lot of these ways that white people benefit, especially when we're talking about conversations about race and helping someone understand how they have benefited, even if life is hard and even if it feels like they haven't experienced privilege. You know, we like to say that it's not that bad things don't happen to you if you're white, but they don't happen to you because of your skin color. And helping people to just kind of shift their focus and see the world in a different way.
I took the opportunity to ask Layla and Terry, being that they're involving white people into anti-racist activism. We have Colin Kaepernick, who is mixed, and he is leading a major protest, and he's getting support, more support every week for this protest, where he is refusing to stand up during the Pledge of Allegiance for the flag during his football games until police brutality in the United States against people of color is addressed. And I asked the activists from White Nonsense Roundup, what has been the feedback that they've received in their group to Colin Kaepernick, and how they've been addressing the animosity that has been, you know, levied his way and towards mixed people, when it is believed that we owe white America something because we're in the United States and because we're part white.
And the stuff around Colin has been, we've been called into a lot of conversations around his protest and, you know, and. If nothing else, his protest has definitely revealed the inextricable link between hyperpatriotism and racism. Because you have these same, you know, these folks out there that are, you know, telling him if he doesn't like the flag, he should get out, which is hands down the most un-American thing you could possibly say. And yeah, and then you also have folks who are telling him he's not, you know, he's not black enough to be participating in this, as though there's some, you know, these are the same folks who, you know, back in the day would have supported the one drop rule and all of that grotesqueness. So it's,
well, we definitely are seeing evidence of the discomfort of protest, you know, that it seems like these alt-right folks, no black protest in particular is quiet enough. You know, it's like there's a riot and there's all this pushback of rioting is so inappropriate and why are you doing this and couldn't you just find a nicer way to protest? And so here you have an example of a very peaceful, very quiet, you know, it's a subtle thing he's been doing for a while and no one had even really picked up on it until recently. And the response is, no, yeah, still not quite enough, right? So we're learning a lot about what the perception is. And in that way, like, I commend him because it's so effective. Like, it's just obviously, you know, it's not designed to make people comfortable and feel good and pat themselves on the back and go, wow, gosh, we're so great. Like, right. It's an act of protest. And so in that way, it is super effective. And it's brought this attention to an audience that probably prefers to exercise their white privilege to not have to think about racism. So I, you know, it's very exciting in that way. But boy, it has stirred up a lot of nonsense.
As we just discussed, intergroup xenophobia and intergroup rivalries based on ideas of ethnicity and ideas of racial purity can be just as damaging as racialism coming from an external force. So Ernest asked Layla and Terry, how does White Nonsense Roundup officially deal with white progressives and white liberals who have not copped on to their own internalized xenophobia, acknowledged or unacknowledged, and the presence of racialist attitudes within the white progressive world?
You know, that's a damn fine question. It's complicated. I mean, for us in our little corner of the activist world, you know, or at least for me, it all, like, we have to listen, and we have to get, we white folks, I say we meaning us white folks, we have to listen and we have to get better. We have to be stronger than we've been. Because in a lot of ways, I feel like our fragility and our tendency to just pretend like everything's fine is a weakness that we have to examine. And, you know, my work, what I'm doing is trying to get people to examine it, trying to get people to look at it, trying to get people to recognize what is happening and listen to their friends, listen to their coworkers, listen to people that they come in contact with, listen to people on the internet who are telling us what's happening. They're not making it up.
Yeah, I think this is Terry. I think the future of the revolution is bigger. I mean, I think there really is a numbers game at play here when it comes to the involvement of white people. And that if we can reach kind of a tipping point where there are more people speaking up and there are more people who are well-informed and willing to act on compassion rather than on fear or on ignorance, you know, then I think that's the only way that we'll get ahead, is if we really get people. You know, there are amazing resources for kids. You mentioned children. I think education and just simple conversation about these topics from a really early age is absolutely critical, and that there's no reason that we shouldn't be talking about race. We shouldn't be talking about what the police are doing to black men. You know, like, this is stuff that kids are actually capable of learning and talking about in the proper way. There are amazing bibliographies available online of all of the wide array of children's books that focus on these issues and, you know, kind of how to have these discussions with kids, because it just needs to be commonplace. It shouldn't have to be like a special thing or like, ooh, I'm going to be an activist for an hour and then go talk about it. Like, this just needs to be a part of our life the way that we've asked it to be a part of everyone else's life.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and it's going to, no,
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh no, I just, you know, there are already so many organizations out there in various communities, in the black community, in the native community. They're already doing amazing revolutionary work. Like, it's happening. The work is being done. But because the way our system is structured to favor whiteness and to listen to whiteness above all else, we're not going to change anything until we reach, like Terry was saying, that tipping point. There has to be more white people involved. We have to show up. We have to have these conversations at Thanksgiving. We have to show up in the street when we see some shit happening. We have to stand up and stop it. Like, we have to be present for the revolution. We can't just sit here and pretend like the world, like violence and trauma isn't happening in our world every single day just because it's not happening to us.
Or even caring. Like, you know, I think there's a lot of really well-intentioned people, and that, you know, we're in an era where good intentions just aren't sufficient. You know, we received something like 200 applications to work with us as volunteers within, I don't know, a couple weeks. And then we've been trying to process through all of them. But like that sort of showing up is a good sign that it's not, you know, like it's just the two of us. There's a whole movement of people, and trying to kind of funnel good thoughts and a compassionate heart into action that reflects that, as opposed to contribute to the problem, perpetuate white supremacy. We hear a lot of times kind of pushback of like, don't you know, we're all one race. There is no race separation. And we try to say, well, biologically, yes, we're all one species. But, you know, the idea of race and how it's used as a power structure, you know, it was created by people, which means it can be uncreated by people. It's that easy.
My final question for Layla and Terry was, how can we find you and how can people get involved?
Really quickly, that, you know, we are a safe place where people can come and ask questions. If you're a white person and you're hesitant and you need to have a tough conversation with someone, maybe in your friends, family, or work group, you know, you can write to us and we will help you with resources. We'll help talk through it. You know, we're a safe place for all those awkward questions about race. We'll do our best to answer them and link you to resources so that, you know, you can actually get into the fray with us. And our website is www.whitenonsenseroundup.com. Thank you so much for having us.
All right. That was Layla and Terry from No White Nonsense Roundup. You can find them on Twitter at No White Nonsense, on Tumblr at No White Nonsense, on Instagram at No White Nonsense, and on Facebook at White Nonsense Roundup. This is the Angry Indian, and you are still listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Please stay tuned.
Don't let the colonial occupation blues get you down. Listen to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. The podcast for Intelligent Aboriginal.
You'd be loving this, mate, wouldn't you?
Have you witnessed anything like this? Anybody can report this behaviour.
Hey, guys, can I get a hand for a sec?
I thought you lesbians are supposed to be as good as us, like.
No matter how subtle.
Hey, princess, where's your tiara today?
They are all forms of sexually based harassment. If you know someone's prejudices have got out of hand or have become inappropriate, do something about it.
I Don't Know More calls all people
to join in peaceful revolution,
to honor Indigenous sovereignty,
and protect the land and water
for generations to come.
Mexicans, South Americans, all Indigenous people, get inspired.
Take action.
And become a part of the solution.
It's my future.
Your future.
Our future.
We are the protectors of Mother Earth.
Stand up and protect it.
Stand up and protect it.
Stand up
and protect our Earth.
Do not sit.
Do not sit.
Do not sit.
Do not sit.
And become a part of this incredible movement.
The time has come.
Idle no more.
Idle no more.
Idle no more.
Become idle no more.
Nothing British is a campaign against racism and extremism. Add your voice by signing our petition at www.nothingbritish.com.
Violence. Directly, I've lost a few friends.
I've been affected by gun violence over the years. It's through deaths of friends and family members and associates.
When I was 5 years old, I was held at gunpoint in a home invasion.
I've gone to the juvenile detention centers and I've met dozens of young kids, babies really, who have been affected by gun violence.
Directly, I've lost a few friends, but I think what why this touches my heart is having children of my own.
You know, I've been at parties where, you know, I had just left the party and, you know, maybe 10, 15 minutes later, you know, I heard that, you know, somebody got shot and didn't make it.
There are a lot of people benefiting off of our pain, and it's time we do something.
I'm here to unload my investment because I think that it's important that we start kind of seeing where our money is going.
It's time to go to your financial advisor and demand that there are no gun investments in your 401k.
Even if you don't have investments, you can still help spread the word.
This is something everyone can do.
So if you push your people that have 401ks, it might be your grandma, it might be your cousin, this effort can make a big impact.
I'm unloading
for my loved ones that I lost.
I'm unloading from my 18-year-old self.
I'm unloading my 401k for the future of my children.
I'm unloading.
I'm unloading
for my family and their future.
I'm unloading so that my daughter can grow up in a safe, loving world.
Unload and join the movement.
Use hashtag I'm unloading to pledge your support for gun-free investing.
White society wants you to know that anti-African racial hatred is a thing of the past.
We are the Ku Klux Klan. We hate niggers. We hate Jews. We hate faggots. And we hate specs. We don't have to have a reason to hate. People need to get off your ass and wake up. This is America.
With white people showing love like this, who needs enemies? Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. The anti-colonial cure for mental slavery.
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
It's our news day.
In other Dakota Access Pipeline news, last Thursday, Morton County, North Dakota, issued an arrest warrant for me. The charge, criminal trespass, a misdemeanor offense. The case, State of North Dakota versus Amy Goodman, stems from Democracy Now!'s coverage in North Dakota over Labor Day weekend of the Native American-led protests against the Dakota Access Pipeline. On Saturday, September 3rd, Democracy Now! Filmed security guards working for the Dakota Access Pipeline Company using dogs and pepper spray to attack protesters.
These people are just, we're threatening all of us with them, these dogs. And she, that woman over there, she was charging them and it bit somebody right in the face.
The dog has blood in its nose and its mouth.
And she's still standing here threatening.
You can't. Why are you letting her dog go after?
Democracy Now!'s video report went viral online. Our footage was rebroadcast on many outlets, including CBS, NBC, NPR.org, CNN, MSNBC, and Huffington Post. Also charged was Cody Hall for his alleged presence at the September 3rd land defense action and for a subsequent protest on September 6th. Hall is considered a lead organizer in the movement against the Dakota Access Pipeline and was arrested at one of the checkpoints that have been erected by North Dakota authorities to restrict access to the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation and the growing pipeline opposition camps. Hall was denied bail and remained in jail throughout the weekend. Hall's attorneys and several others we spoke to confirmed it's highly unusual for a defendant charged with misdemeanor trespass to be jailed and denied bail. According to the complaint, the charges are based on a viewing of Democracy Now!'s video report of the incident conducted by the North Dakota Bureau of Criminal Investigation. Special Agent Lindsay Wohl's sworn affidavit states that I was there as a journalist. Wohl wrote, quote, Amy Goodman can be seen on the video identifying herself and interviewing protesters about their involvement in the protest, unquote. The criminal complaint was approved by Assistant State's Attorney for Morton County, Gabrielle J. Goeder. To date, none of the private security personnel shown in the video, both assaulting protesters and commanding their dogs to attack them, have been charged or arrested. Democracy Now! Is consulting with attorneys in North Dakota, as well as at the Center for Constitutional Rights. CCR Legal Director Bahar Azmi said, quote, this is clearly a violation of the First Amendment, an attempt to repress this important political movement by silencing media coverage, unquote.